We present John Westbrook as Charles Bassett and Valerie Kirkbright as Amanda Twyford with Barbara Cooper and David March in The Georgian Rake, adapted for radio by Cynthia Pugh from the novel by Alice Chetwynd Lay. The Georgian Rake.
Lord Bassett stood before the fire in the drawing room of his house in St. James's Square. He was gazing up at the portrait which dominated the room, a painting of his wife, who had died some 29 years earlier. His grim look softened for a moment as he looked upon those beautiful features. Then it hardened once more as he heard footsteps outside. He turned to face the door as it opened, and his son entered the room.
Ah, hello, Charles.
I believe you wish to see me, sir.
Aye, sit down. You take a glass of canary?
Thank you. My aunt is well, I trust?
Oh, aye, that is well enough.
And my esteemed cousin?
Damn it, Charles. I never can understand why you must mention your cousin Roger in that damned offensive tone. He's been a good enough friend to you, but God, and if only you had half his virtues, I'd buy her happy tomorrow.
Well, then let us be thankful that I have not. I drink to your continued health, Father.
Much you care.
Now, I wonder just what it is you want of me. Forgive me, my dear sir, but you're not much in the habit of seeking my company.
And you, may I point out, are not much in the habit of giving me the opportunity. I hear of you being seen everywhere, gambling dens and prize fights, but you're not often to be met with in St. James's Square.
I'm aware that you are well informed of my movements, particularly of the more spectacular variety. But I do take part in quite a number of respectable activities, my dear sir, little though you may be disposed to believe it. Why, only yesterday evening, I was at a ball, a most tediously respectable ball in the house of an unexceptionable hostess. No less a person than my Lady Twyford.
Lady Twyford? Oh, that reminds me. I thought we might have a little talk, my boy. I'm made uneasy by these constant rumors concerning you that run around the town.
So?
That fellow Sir Francis Dashwood, such a crony of yours. Tell me the things one hears about him. It's even said that he goes in for devil worship at that place of his on the Thames.
Oh, there's no harm in mad Francis. He's but a jester. His antics amuse me.
Amuse you? Egad, I can't imagine whom you take after. Not myself, I fancy, and certainly not your mother.
Ah, my mother. That is the real reason for our quarrel, is it not? You have never forgiven me for being the cause of her death.
When they brought you to me, I told them to take you away. I never wanted to set eyes on you. You were bought at too dear a price. No matter. The point is, Charles, don't you think it high time you were wed? You're close on 29.
So?
Well, we must have an heir. At your age, I'd already taken care of the succession. What have you to say?
Why, sir, I say that I think perhaps I will partake of another glass of this excellent canary. Is there much more of this in your cellar?
Then we don't try to change the subject. First, tell me when you mean to marry and whom.
When? Oh, that I cannot say at present. Whom? Well, now, whom do you suggest?
Well, what think you of Isabella Twyford?
Isabella Twyford? Now, let me think. Is she the red-headed one?
Oh, damn it, you were at a ball in the house yesterday. You surely must remember the chit.
Not the pudding-faced female who's been dogging my footsteps this past 2 months.
I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing wrong with this girl's looks. Far from it. She's a good match, you know. Old name, a fortune in her own right. When you'll have her father's goodwill, I'll engage to that.
Young ladies have been known to have a mind of their own in these affairs.
When it comes to marriage, no dutiful daughter has a mind of her own.
Oh, I don't know that I'm altogether enchanted by the notion of taking a dutiful daughter to wife.
You're a bigger fool than I took you for. May I ask what kind of female would have the power to enchant you, as you put it?
Oh, believe me, sir, it would take too long for me to answer that. Very well, then. I consent to try my luck with the beautiful and talented Miss Twyford. But now, sir, I must ask you to excuse me. My respects to my Aunt Fanny, and of course to my revered cousin. Your servant, sir.
I declare it is.
Is, madam? Oh.
Mr. Charles Bassett and your troop. Can I have the pleasure of driving you anywhere, sir? I'm out solely to take the air, you know, and am not in the least hurry in the world. Indeed, I shan't take no for an answer, and so I warn you.
I believe I need not put you in so much trouble, Miss...
Naughty man. I do declare you've forgotten my name. But never mind. I'm very forgiving, as you shall find. I am Georgina Dunster, and don't you dare forget again. Do please step in.
I protest, Miss Dunster. I am vastly obliged to you, but I positively must walk. Doctor's orders, you know.
Doctor's orders?
My rheumatics, alas, must keep on the move. Anno Domini, my dear young lady. It catches us all in time.
But surely you cannot be.
Forgive me, ma'am, but a good day to you.
Good day, sir. Drive on, James.
Let us hope that will discourage our pudding-faced female. Oh, Lord. I wonder if the fair Isabella will be any better.
Well, Jim, what news about poor Carriage?
'Cause the linchpin's broke, Miss Marnie.
How tiresome, is it not, Brownie?
Tiresome? I should imagine that to be an understatement, Amanda. When we are already delayed upon our journey by some 2 hours or more.
We ought not to have allowed Mrs. Matchett to persuade us to stay to a meal. But I was hungry.
A young lady of quality is never hungry, Amanda. Or if she is, she should endeavor to conceal the fact.
What we want best is some tools. Better still, a blacksmith.
And where are we to find one? There'll be nothing but a cottage or two until we reach the village of Maidenhead, if that should be within our power.
Tom could maybe ride ahead and bring back out.
Look, there are some buildings at the bottom of that lane down by the river. It will most likely be a farm, but we could try there to help.
A good notion, Miss Mandy. Young Tom can see to the horses while I step down there.
I'll come with you.
In all that mud, I positively forbid it.
Dear Brownie, pray don't do that. I should like a short walk of all things at this moment, if I should so dislike to disobey you, especially since you are leaving us so soon.
Oh, very well, then. Have a care to her, Jem, and do not let her out of your sight.
Thank you, Brownie. Come along, Jem. Let's see how quickly we can get there.
Blacksmith, you say? There'll be one over at Medlam across the river. You can get there by way of the ford.
And where will be that?
Along that path by the river. The smithy's at the top of the lane when you're across. Excuse me, ma'am. I'll get it off with the milking.
Thank you very much. Come on, Jeff.
You'd better go back now, miss. Like I said, really, you have.
No. See, the ferry boat's just coming. Besides, look over there through the trees, to the right of the jetty.
Ah, some kind of old ruin, right, it was?
Suppose it should be some ruined abbey, where monks used to dwell.
Hopefully, Miss Mandy, go over there. We must get on if we'll be on the long road tonight.
I would like a closer look at it, Jim. I could just take a peep while you go up to the blacksmith.
Oh, no, your governor said most particular I wanted to let you out of my sight.
Dear Jim, I can come to no harm. You will not be long away. And only think what fun it would be to explore a ruin that one never knew existed.
Oh, very well, then. But not a word to young governor's mind, or my life won't be worth a moment's purchase.
I won't say a word, I promise. Tell the ferryman to drop me by those willow trees. It isn't far from there.
Good evening, ferryman.
Evening.
There's the blacksmith I'm seeking.
Aye.
And will you put the young lady here off at the willows yonder?
Best not.
You hear what he says, miss? Best stay along with me.
No. Lucky, the natural poor fellow. Just no account of what he said. He's sure and pay him well,
Jeff. As you say, Miss Bradley. We'll be obliged if they lose these big fella.
I was wrong. It's not entirely in ruins. It was an abbey. There are the cloisters below that old tower. And that great building beside the house must have been the chapel. The house is certainly empty. No smoky chimney, shuttered windows.
What are you doing here?
I beg your pardon, sir. Of course, I had no right, but seeing the ruined tower from the opposite bank, I thought...
Indeed, you had no right. Perhaps you will oblige me by removing yourself instantly.
Of course, but if you would let me explain...
This is no place for curious schoolgirls. If I find you here again, I shall be obliged to take sterner measures. Now, go!
Very well. But I think you are vastly uncivil, sir. And I'm not a schoolgirl.
That is apparent.
Oh, you saved, sir.
And did young place please, your ass?
Well enough, Jim.
Big Joel, the blacksmith here, was uncommon put out to learn I'd left my mistress there.
There's no place for maids, that.
What is it called?
Medlam Abbey, ma'am.
It isn't.
Sometimes with crests on the panels, but it never stays long. No one ever sees their owners in the village.
And there'll be some who say they've seen ghosts a-flitting up and down the lawn from t'other side of the river. And if you stand beneath the wall of a night, you may up your shrieks and laugh.
That curdles your blood, it do. Give over, Joe. Here's the landing stage. You help me pull her in. First, if you run up to the road, Miss Mandy, and tell Miss Brown we'll be coming, I'll help Joe to bring his gear.
I'll tell her you won't be long. You are uncommon silent, Miss Amanda. Am I fine?
I was thinking,
this is a change indeed.
May I ask the subject of these deep deliberations?
I was wondering how I shall find life in London. Bella talks endlessly of the diversions to be met with, but I'm not altogether certain that I shall feel as she does. Lately, it seems our notions are not always alike.
That is not surprising. Mrs. Isabella has shown signs of arriving at discretion this last 12 months. But you, I fear, are still a sad hoyden.
Yes, oh yes, I know. Dearest Brownie, pray do not moralize. You must realize by now that I'm quite beyond hope of reform.
We would not have you change, my child. You are possessed of that most human of all virtues, a warm heart.
But Brownie, you've never spoken like that to me before.
Beg pardon, miss, but the coach be ready to start now. I've paid the blacksmith and sent him off happy.
Good, then let us be on our way.
Let me give you a hand, Brownie.
Drive on, Jim. We have many miles to go before we reach London. And there's Hounslow Heath yet to cross. They say it is a notorious haunt of highwaymen.
I would dearly like to be the highwayman who would hold you up, Brownie. He would indeed be a bold man.
You are a minx. And I do beg of you to put a guard upon your tongue and your actions while you're in town. Try to behave more like your sister, Miss Isabella.
I think her fine manners are really play-acting. She's still the same Bella you used to get up to such mad starts.
No doubt we shall soon see her wed.
Wed? Bella?
Why, yes. You must surely realize that your mamma had that in mind when she took your sister to town.
But Bella means to marry John Webster. He quite goes to her, and I know she is fond of him.
Yes, oh, nevertheless, I fancy that your mamma looks higher than a country squire for a son-in-law.
Then she is a great goose.
Ah, remember, you speak of your mother.
Even the best of mothers can be a goose sometimes. But Bella will have her own way in the end.
Well, we'll not argue about it, child. How dark it is getting, and not a light to be seen. I could wish we were considerably nearer to our destination. What's that?
Jim, why have you stopped?
Oh, try not to be frightened, my dear.
Head down the window.
Better do as he says. What do you want with us?
Your valuables, ladies. Oh. No harm will come to you if you do as I say. That's right, Possum.
Jim!
No use calling him. He's been took care of. Come on, give me that ring. Yours or it'll be the one.
Hey! Someone's coming!
I trust no one is hurt. I saw that you were waylaid and made what speed I could.
Thank you, sir. We are unharmed, my charge and I. Oh. But our groom and coachman...
Are you all right, ma'am? Oh. Except for a few bruises. And Tom got a crack on the head for old fella.
Oh, poor Tom. He fought most bravely, I could see. I'm glad I bit that man.
You what?
I bit his hand.
I must say, Miss Amanda, that I never thought to be congratulating a charge of mine on such behavior.
Perhaps you will permit me to present myself. I am Roger Thurston, nephew to my Lord Bassett.
I am Amanda Twyford, and this is my governess, Miss Brown.
Twyford? Are you by any chance related to my Lord Twyford, who is a great friend of my uncle?
Why, yes, I am his younger daughter.
Oh.
Oh, it is raining. Will you not ride inside with us, Mr. Thurston?
Pray do, sir, otherwise you'll be quite drenched.
You are very kind, lady.
Jim will tie your horse to the back of the coach. Will you not, Jim?
Aye, Miss Mandy, that will be a pleasure. Come up then, my dear.
Thurston?
Yes, Miss Twyford.
Miss Brown is asleep, and there is something I want to ask you. Are you acquainted at all with the village of Magnum?
A little.
Have you managed to come at a solution of the mystery of the Abbey?
The Abbey? What do you know of that?
I was there quite by chance this afternoon. I was warned off by a horrid person. And then the blacksmith told a tale of hobgoblins that he treated me vastly. Would you please tell me more if you know anything more to the purpose?
I fear I am unable to satisfy your interest. But you spoke of a horrid person.
I believe he was very likely the owner. He was cold and forbidding. And vastly insulting into the bargain.
Can you describe his looks?
He was of about your age, I should say. Tall, with a stern face and sneering mouth.
It was not the owner, that much I may tell you. I fancy I know who it may have been. But, Miss Twyford, I fear I ought to warn you that Medenham Abbey is not considered a suitable subject for conversation in town. If you will take my advice, you will not mention it to anyone at all.
Will you take a cup of chocolate, my dear?
No, thank you, Margaret.
You seem a trifle low-spirited this morning. Is anything amiss?
It's this business concerning Isabella.
Charles Bassett has spoken to you.
He has. I encountered him at the Cocoa Tree yesterday evening. He's a dead and queer customer, Margaret. Believe you and my father desire a marriage between your daughter and myself, he said. May I have the honor of waiting upon you tomorrow? I stammered out, I know not what. Then the damn fellow turned away with a bow for all the world as though he were buying a horse from my stable instead of asking my daughter's hand in marriage.
So long as he offers, it is no matter as to the manner of it. Upon rep, we may congratulate ourselves, my lord. It will be a match that will set the town by the ear.
I trust we're making the right decision. His reputation...
I hope you do not expect me to censure a man of this day and age for being somewhat of a rake.
It's not only that. He keeps company with that odd fish, Francis Dashwood. There are rumors running round the clubs concerning a society which Dashwood has founded and which meets somewhere along the Thames.
And pray, what is supposed to be so dreadful about this society?
No one really knows, but all kinds of conjectures are made. Orgies, say some. Others, black magic.
Black magic, indeed.
You may laugh, Margaret, but do you care to think of our daughter tied for life to a man who indulges in such pleasures? Better a wholesome country lad, say I.
By whom, no doubt, you mean John Webster.
Well, he's a fine young man, and known to us from the cradle. Moreover, I'll lay any odds Bella is fond of him.
You must be aware, my lord, that I went to the trouble of bringing Isabella to town in order to avoid such a match. A country squire, forsooth, when she may have the pick of the town's beau and a handsome fortune into the bargain. Not to speak of the title some day.
The Websters are an old family, and young John has an adequate competence. Well, besides, Bella has more than enough for both. Let the girl be happy and to the devil with your ambitions.
I fear you must reckon with Isabella's ambitions, too. She thinks better of her claims than to become a mere Mrs. Webster. Oh, there was perhaps some boy and girl nonsense between them. But that is quite over, I assure you.
It is a lovely day, is it not, John?
Indeed it is, Bella.
Of course, it cannot be expected that the weather should be settled at this time of the year.
Bella, this is too ridiculous. All the years we have known each other, and the first time we encounter one another in a fortnight, you must speak to me of the weather.
Well, you do not help me overmuch.
I was nerving myself to speak my errand.
Your errand?
Yes, Bella, and I think you know what it is. You must realize, my dearest, in what esteem I have held you these past 3 years. Will you do me the honor to become my wife?
John, what are you saying?
Bella, surely you are not going to be missish. My feelings must have been plain. And I have always thought I could count on a return of my regard.
Indeed.
You cannot have forgotten the Hunt Ball last year.
Oh, to be sure, that is an occasion in the country. But I have attended so many vastly superior ones here in town.
Isabella! I will not believe that you meant nothing by what passed between us on that occasion.
It is very ungentlemanlike of you to remind me of a foolish indiscretion.
Indiscretion? Is that what you call it?
After all, what was it but one little kiss?
I thought of it as our betrothal.
Then you took too much upon yourself. If you must know, I'm about to become affianced to Lord Barset's son.
Charles Barset? You will wed a man of his reputation.
I do not know what you mean. Lord Barset is a friend of Papa's. It is all arranged.
I see. Then it only remains for me to wish you happy and to relieve you of my presence.
I hope we may still be friends.
No. There can never be so little as friendship between us, Bella.
since you are to wed another, there must be an end to our association. I will bid you good day.
Oh, John, I didn't mean... I never thought to hurt you. There, my love.
Mandy.
There, my love. Here, take my handkerchief. Dry your eyes. That's better.
Thank you, Mandy.
What does it all mean? I passed John on his way out just now. He went by with scarce a greeting. Here, I find you in tears. Have you quarreled?
Yes. Oh, that is to say, no. Not precisely. You must know. John has just made me an offer.
Oh, is that all? You goose. Why do you cry?
Because he says we may no longer be friends.
No longer? Mr. Bella, you surely cannot mean that you have refused him.
Well,
you have. But in heaven's name, why, Bella?
Oh, there's not been time to tell you since you arrived last night.
The fact is, Papa has arranged a marriage for me with the son of an old friend of his.
Papa has?
It's not so surprising as all that. You must have realized that Mama intended to make a match for me in town if she could.
Mama, yes. But Papa would never force you against your will.
Who said that he does?
You cannot mean that you are willing for this man.
Why should I not be? He is heir to my Lord Barset and quite the most eligible beau in town.
That is no good reason for marrying anyone.
Well, perhaps when you see him for yourself, you may better understand his attraction for me.
And when will that be?
He is to call upon Papa to make a formal offer for my hand this afternoon. Then I shall conceal myself somewhere in the hall and take a look at this paragon. I can be arranging the flowers. Mama always says that is a ladylike occupation.
Thank you, Mr. Barset. That all seems very satisfactory. And we are dining with your father tomorrow. That is to be our pleasure, sir.
Oh, that voice.
Ah, Amanda, my dear. Come here. Ah, this is my younger daughter, Amanda. This is Mr. Barset, Mandy. He has this moment become a fiancé to your sister.
I must wish you joy, sir.
Then I must thank you, little sister to be. Let me see you to your carriage, Mr. Barset. Who will that be, I wonder? Why, it is my cousin Roger. Bid you good day, cousin Charles.
I did not look to find you here. Ah, Miss Tryford, I but called to see how you did after your recent ordeal.
It is very kind of you, sir. Papa, I would make known to you the gentleman who rescued us from the highwayman on our journey here. Mr. Roger Thurst.
My dear sir, I should like to express my gratitude for your service to my daughter. If you will pardon me for one moment while I see Mr. Barset to his carriage.
Pray do not put yourself to the trouble of accompanying me, my lord.
Oh, but I...
I believe I may do very well alone. Good day to you, sir.
Pray, come this way, Mr. Thurston. My wife is in the drawing room. Are you coming, Amanda?
Oh, you and Mr. Thurston will forgive me, Papa. I will join you presently. There is something I promised to do for Mama.
Bella, may I come in?
Why, of course, Mandy. I was only deciding which gown I would wear for dining at Lord Barset's tomorrow evening.
Oh, never mind that.
Bella, that man, that gentleman to whom you are engaged, he is the one I saw at that place I told you.
Oh, yes, indeed, dear. Sit down and get your breath.
What were you saying?
I told you the whole story when I arrived the other night. The horrid creature whom I encountered at the mysterious abbey is none other than your Mr. Barset.
How can you be sure?
I could never forget that sneering face. Moreover, the voice is the same. Oh, he was more pleasant today than on that occasion.
I can't see that it signifies.
Not signifies. You ought to wed a man who has some connection with a place of ill repute.
You do not know that. After all, you were there too, yet have no connection with it.
But I told you, he warned me it was no place for me. Now, why should he do that if he knew nothing of it?
I cannot say. In any event, what have you to go on but rumors concerning this abbey? I dare say it is all a hum.
I see you will not believe me. But had you been there, you must have felt something, an emanation of evil.
Oh, Mandy, your sense of the dramatic plays you false. You should take to the stage, my love, where your talents will be better employed.
Very well, love. But if I could prove to you that your affiance was mixed up in something discreditable, would you still wed him, Bella?
Well, that depends. Believe me, Amanda, it is no uncommon thing for a man of fashion to be somewhat of a rake. Mama has explained it all to me. Such things, she says, usually right themselves after marriage.
That I perfectly comprehend. But that is not what I mean. There is something more in this. Something
Evil. Rumor and imagination, my love. Of that I feel convinced. Let us leave the tedious subject and decide what I am to wear at dinner tomorrow.
My dear Lord Twyford, it is indeed a pleasure to see you and your family here in St. James's Square. Allow me to present my sister, Mrs. Thelston.
Your servant.
John, you are most welcome. Miss Isabella, what a delightful gown, if I may say so.
Thank you, Mrs. Thelston.
I hope Charles will do his best to deserve his good fortune.
I could never deserve it, Aunt Fanny.
Amanda, child, come and be presented to Mrs. Thelston.
How do you do, ma'am?
So this is Miss Amanda. I believe my son Roger had the pleasure of rendering you some small service a few days ago.
Yes, indeed. Mr. Thelston was more than kind.
Please say no more about it, Miss Amanda.
What a very beautiful drawing room you have, Lord Bassett. Is it not, my dear?
Oh, it is, indeed.
It is tolerable, I suppose.
And that magnificent portrait over the mantel. Might I ask...
My wife. She did not survive Charles's birth.
Oh. Oh, how very sad for you. You are like your mother, Charles.
Do you think so, Mama? I am not of your opinion. The lady in the picture has a sweet face.
Amanda.
And I have not.
If you had, sir, you would scarcely thank me for saying so.
Miss Amanda has your measure, Cousin Charles.
Oh, dear, I hope not.
Indeed, no. I judge Mr. Bassett to be a deep character who is not to be known on a short acquaintance.
You do me too much honor, Mary.
She is a sad rattle-pate, I fear. Amanda, dearest, you are not in the schoolroom now, recollect.
Dinner is served, my lord.
Then let us go in. Tally, dear, do you lead the way with Lord Twyford, and I will escort Lady Twyford.
We now have an opportunity, Isabella, of becoming better acquainted.
Yes, indeed.
You would perhaps prefer that I do not call you by your Christian name? You find it a trifle intimate?
Of course you must use it if you wish. It's just that it seems so strange.
Many things will seem strange for now.
I suppose so, yes. Look at Isabella, Mr. Thurston. I wonder what your odious cousin has said to make her blush like that. Congratulations. Oh, I beg your pardon.
Do not put yourself about, Miss Amanda. The truth to tell, I feel a little as you do. Your sister is indeed discomposed. Charles must have been clumsy.
I believe it was deliberate. Mr. Thurston, there is something I must confide to you.
Yes?
You may remember that I told you that I had met a gentleman on the grounds of that place that shall be nameless. Well, I am convinced that it was none other than your cousin.
Quietly, or we shall draw attention to ourselves. See your mother's eyes upon you. Make believe that we are conducting a trifling conversation.
You are not surprised at what I tell you?
No, because I already know of my cousin's connection with the Abbey.
What goes on there? Is it something shameful?
I may not tell you what I know.
Who is to tell me if you do not?
Why not ask my cousin?
On your mother, mind to do it.
Would you dare?
Would I?
Ah, I see I have said the wrong thing. I might have known that one of your spirits... But seriously, Miss Amanda, I don't advise such a step.
No, sir, is your cousin named as a model of propriety?
Quite the reverse, though he is the best of fellows, of course. The other ladies are departing for the drawing room. I will see you there in a little while.
In the kitchen, I have a little sit here by the fire, dear Lady Twyford. Evenings are still chilly, are they not?
Yes, indeed, Mrs. Thurston. Somehow I'd hope to find London warmer than the country. I cannot imagine why.
So very charming a girl, your elder daughter, if I may say so. Charles is fortunate, indeed.
And there's good fortune on both sides, I believe.
Oh, to be sure, yes. Charles, of course, has been somewhat of a disappointment to his father. But I dare say all that is past now that he is to wed. It is strange, is it not, how different blood relations can be? My own son, Roger, has never given us a moment's uneasiness.
That must be the result of your upbringing, dear Mrs. Thurston. I congratulate you.
Oh, you are too kind. I see that your daughters are looking at our music. I understand Isabella is accomplished upon the spinet. Is Amanda equally gifted?
Both of them play and sing, Mrs. Thurston. Though I fear me Amanda is still a hoyden at heart and prefers horses to music. But I will admit the child has a pretty voice if she would only practice.
Then we will hope for some entertainment from both of them. Ah, I hear of a gentleman. Miss Isabella, may we prevail upon you to play for us?
And afterwards, perhaps Miss Amanda would see you.
Pray do play for us, Mr. Lightfoot.
Well, if you insist, Mrs. Thurston.
That is right. Yes, come along.
Allow me to open the instrument.
Here is the piece you know, Isabella. I will turn over for you.
Thank you, ma'am. That was charming, dear Isabella. Indeed, I think she sang extremely well.
And now let us have something gay. Mr. Thurston and his cousin shall dance as a reel.
Splendid notion. But Roger and I are ill-assorted partners. Perchance you and I, Miss Amanda, might cut a better caper.
Oh, no, sir. I'm not yet sufficiently versed in the art of the dance to do you credit. After all, I am only a schoolgirl.
But no. What can make you say such a thing?
Someone told me so once. A curious schoolgirl. That was the expression, if I remember rightly.
Indeed. It was ungallant, the person concerned.
He was an ungallant person.
Ah, child, how do you run on? Really, my Lord Bassett, she says the oddest things.
I knew someone else once who said and did the oddest things. It did not prevent her from being the most charming woman on earth.
Thank you, my lord. Thank you very much. John Webster, good morning to you.
Amanda, how come you to be out in the park so early? And unescorted to boot.
I love riding alone and everyone's still abed. I shall be home before my parents miss me. Oh, John, I wanted so much to see you.
Oh, I'm pleased to see you too, Mandy. I'm sorry about the other day.
When you charge past me in our house with scarce a word. Do not distress yourself, John. Bella told me all.
I suppose she has accepted that other fellow?
Yes. But I don't believe she has much joy at the contract. You should have seen the miserable countenance she put on yesterday evening when we were dining at my Lord Barclay's. And late when I sang Barbara Allen, she was close to tears.
She may perhaps feel some sentimental attachment to what is past, but she made it quite clear that nothing would prevent her marrying Barclay. I can offer nothing to compete with his possessions.
Then what do you mean to do?
I thought perhaps I might make the grand tour.
You mean to run away? To leave Bella to marry a man whom she does not care for? And who is moreover some kind of a fiend?
His reputation is a wild one, to be sure.
His reputation is not all the trouble. John, do you happen to have heard of Medenham Abbey?
The place near Marlow, you mean? Oh, I did hear some tale or other, mere village gossip, I thought it. Why do you ask?
Only that I went there.
You did?
Only to look at the ruins as I thought them to be. And I was ordered off by no less a person than Mr. Charles Bassett.
Charles Bassett was there, you say? But if the whole thing is a hum, there's probably an innocent explanation for his being there.
Oh, positively no one will take my story seriously. But I do not mean to let my sister wed this man, and I shall not scruple to go to any lengths to prevent the match.
But what do you mean to do?
I mean to find out more about Medenham. And if it should be to Mr. Bassett's discredit, so much the better. You can help, too.
I? How?
By keeping your ears open at these clubs you go to. We must both watch Charles Bassett. Do you suppose you can contrive an invitation to his house?
Why should I desire an invitation to his house?
Oh, stupid. Why, to spy on him, of course.
Spy upon him?
Now, do not tell me that it isn't at all the thing, or I shall do you a mischief. There may be something to be discovered there. A letter lying about, a scrap of conversation overheard.
Mandy, I could not possibly.
Oh, very well. I must do the best I can on my own account.
No, you mustn't embroil yourself in such an affair. I'll do what I can, but don't expect me to spy upon Bassett, mind, for I won't undertake it.
No matter. There may be some other way, so long as you can bring me some gossip from the club. We must meet here again. What say you to Thursday at this hour? That will give you 3 days in which to find out something.
Thursday it shall be, then.
Isabella, my dear.
Yes, Mama?
Mr. Bassett desires to speak with you. Come here, if you please, Mr. Bassett. Now, Isabella, remember what I said, and pray do not be coy.
Good day to you, Mr. Bassett.
I trust I see you well, madam.
Thank you, yes. Mama, do not go. There is nothing Mr. Barkett can say to me that you should not hear.
Nothing, child. Besides, your papa is waiting to take me for a drive.
Well, Mr. Barkett, will you not be seated?
Not for a moment, thank you. I beg that you will inform me, madam, when I may look to find myself the happiest of men.
I do not know what you mean.
The comment is plain, is it not? I ask you to name our wedding day.
I had not considered the matter. There is no need for haste, is there, sir?
There is no occasion for delay that I know of.
It will be Amanda's birthday in a few weeks' time. Mama is planning a ball. I would like to defer the wedding date until after that event, if it pleases you, sir.
Your wishes are my pleasure. When is this joyful event?
The second week in June. The 10th, to be precise.
Well, then perhaps we may fix upon the third or fourth week of June for our little ceremony.
I do not know.
I perceive there is yet another difficulty. Can it be that there is some other occasion to be celebrated at that time?
No. I was seeking an excuse, as you guessed.
Now we come to it. Tell me, child, is this match to your liking?
Pray do not ask me that.
I must know the truth. I would not have you coerced.
Well, there is nothing of that kind. My parents would not be so unfeeling. Well, it is just that the thought of being a married woman is a little frightening. The responsibility.
Isabella, do you love me?
Love?
I'm aware that it is not fashionable to speak of love to one betrothed. You will, I'm sure, forgive the lapse.
We knew from the first that ours was to be a marriage of convenience, sir.
How convenient is it to you, Isabella? Do you hold me in dislike as your little sister does?
Amanda, does she? I had not observed.
She makes it plain enough. But you have not answered my question.
It is difficult to say precisely what are my sentiments towards you, sir.
Can you not bring yourself to call me Charles? That in itself might lessen the distance between us.
I will try to remember.
A marriage of convenience is a mockery, Isabella. But it is possible that ours might be something more. In all my life, I never yet knew any tenderness that was not purchased. Save only for that given me freely by one faithful old woman. If I had, my story might have been different. But it is not yet too late. You have the power to change all that. Can you give me any hope, Isabella? I am prepared to be patient. I do not expect that you should love me all at once.
I don't know. But what of you, sir? Charles, I had thought that this was for you, too, a marriage of convenience. Mama said...
It is true that I sought your hand without those feelings which should bring a man to seek a wife. But you are lovely, my dear, and also sweet and brave. It should be no difficult matter to love you. Isabella.
No.
I see. You lied to me. Such strong aversion as you obviously have for me can never change. I release you from your promise.
No.
You still wish to wed me?
I have given my word. It is for the best. Mama.
Do not commit the error of allowing your mother to choose you a husband, madam.
I myself have chosen. As you said, it may work out very well in time.
Duchess, I must ask you to forgive my romantic flight of fancy. And now, madam, I will bid you good day. We meet tonight, do we not, at the opera?
Yes.
Believe me, madam, your most humble servant.
There you are, John. Thank you for waiting. I'm late, I know. Hold Susie for me, will you?
I had almost given you up when I saw you cantering towards me.
Oh, we were at the opera last night and did not reach home till the small hours. And then I could not sleep because only look what fell into my hand.
At Hanover Square next Monday at 8. Do not fail me, Brother Francis. What is this, Mandy?
Note to Charles Barkett. It was slipped into his hand by a footman who came to our box.
And how do you come to have it?
I took it out of his pocket.
Amanda!
All's fair in love and war, they say. And truly, I am at war with Mr. Barkett. Besides, it is surely a clue.
It seems an ordinary enough note, apart from the signature. Barkett has no brother.
Exactly. So what can that signature mean?
It sounds like a jest, a sort of nickname. But whose?
And that's easily discovered. You can be in Hanover Square on Monday evening and observe which house Charles Barkett enters. Then you can find out the name of the owner.
I've told you already that I have no fancy to play the spy.
Besides, I don't know the fellow by sight.
You don't?
It so happens that I've never yet met him.
Then I will present you myself. We will call at his house in Albemarle Street.
But, Mandy, on what pretext?
You are an old family friend. You wish to meet Isabella's betrothed, but your father is suddenly ill and you have to return to the country. I can think of a score of excuses.
I don't like this.
Really, you do nothing but make difficulties. One would think you did not mind your beloved Bella's being married to a villain.
Mandy, this man found you trespassing and ordered you off with something less than his usual civility. That is all you know to his discredit.
And the rumors, which you admit you have heard too. Mercy, it's 7:30. I shall be late for breakfast. We will call on Mr. Bartlett tomorrow morning at 11.
Very well, Amanda.
How do you do, Miss Amanda? I'm indeed honored by this call.
Good morning, Mr. Bartlett.
I believe I had not the pleasure of your friend's acquaintance.
Pray forgive me for troubling you at this hour of day. John, this is John, you know. That is to say, may I present Mr. Webster? John, this is Mr. Bartlett, who is the... but there, you know that already.
Your servant, sir.
Your servant, Mr. Bartlett.
John is a very old friend of ours, our neighbor in the country. And he has to leave town on urgent family matters and wished so much to meet you before he went.
Pray be seated. You'll take some refreshment. A glass of Matafio may help, Miss Amanda.
Thank you. That would be quite delightful.
And you, sir? A glass of claret?
Thank you, Mr. Bartlett.
Your Matafio, Miss Amanda?
Thank you.
Your claret, Mr. Webster. And your very good health, both of you.
Good health.
Good health.
And now, what may I have the pleasure of doing for you, Miss Amanda?
Oh, why, nothing in the world. That is, our call is purely a social one. As I told you, Mr. Webster has to leave town.
I trust it is not unpleasant news that summons you so suddenly, Mr. Webster.
What? Oh, no. That is to say, urgent family matters, as Amanda said. But nothing unpleasant.
Yes, no. That is fortunate.
My parents are in their customary good health, I am happy to say. They would not forgive me if I failed to make myself known to Bella's, that is, Miss Twyford's intended.
Quite.
Oh,
what is it, Miss Amanda?
How foolish of me. I have spilled my rat of fear all down the front of my gown.
I will ring for my housekeeper. She will see to it.
There is no need to summon her, Mr. Barsley. If you have the goodness to direct me, I shall easily find my way.
I will not fear of it.
How came you to be so clumsy, Mandy?
Really, I have no idea.
You rang, sir?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Bean. This young lady has had a small accident. Have the goodness to take her where the damage may be repaired.
By all means, sir. Come this way, please. You.
I thought she would never leave me. This must be his study. All these books. The desk overflowing with papers. Will there be anything here, I wonder? Bills and more bills. Really, these men... invitation card from Mama to my birthday ball. I did not know she had sent them out yet. What's this? Bolton's Complete History of Magic. This may be something. Property of Francis Dashwood. Such surely will be brother Francis.
Horrible, is not?
Mr. Bolton... I did not hear you come in.
Never fear. The rest of the book is disappointing in comparison.
I must apologize.
Never mention it, I dare. But you should have told me you wished for a book, and I would have been happy to have supplied you. I fear you must have found my entertainment dull indeed.
No, I thought you and John would like a little time alone together. A female is sometimes a handicap to male conversation.
But you must know that I am particularly addicted to the company of curious schoolgirls.
You do remember.
I do, and I think it is time we understood one another. Perhaps you would care to sit down.
Very well.
Would it be presumptuous in me to ask why it is that I inspire such strong interest in you, Miss Amanda?
If you suppose that my interest has any flattering implication, you deceive yourself.
I am desolated. Love such as yours, Miss Amanda, would be an experience for any man.
Do not call me Miss Amanda. I dislike it of all things.
What shall I call you, then? Curious schoolgirl is not equal to your approval.
Do not call me anything at all.
No, but even a dog must have a name, you know.
If you are to insult me, the sooner we rejoin John, the better.
Injured innocence to the life. But surely... I am the one to consider myself insulted. Your purpose in coming here seems to be of questionable morality. Then there was an odd circumstance the other night at the opera which needs some explanation. In a word, why have you chosen to spy upon me?
I am convinced that you are not a fit person for my sister Bella to wed.
I'm sorry you should have such a poor opinion of me. But surely if your parents and your sister are satisfied...
Bella does not know what she wants, and Papa is wholly under Mama's thumb. One thing is certain, Bella is not in love with you, nor you with her.
That may seem a dreadful thing to you, sweet innocent that you are. But in the fashionable world, it is nothing. One day, you too may learn that.
Never. When I marry, it will be because I love someone so much that I cannot live without him.
Allow me to say that I envy the unknown. He will be a lucky man.
It would be ungenerous in me not to thank you for that. But there is something else. You're concerned in something discreditable connected with that place where I first met you. If Bella knew the truth, she would never consent to become your wife.
Have you not told her?
She will not believe me without proof. That is what I have been trying to obtain.
On what, may I ask, are your suspicions founded?
On local rumor. And on the hints that your cousin, Mr. Thurston, has left Rock.
Roger, what has he said to you?
Not near so much as I would like. But enough to show me that there is something in what I had already heard.
Aye, that is ever his way.
What is this secret? Its possession brings you no happiness, I can see.
I regret infinitely that I am unable to satisfy your curiosity. And now, pray let us return to Mr. Webster.
What is it, Joseph?
Beg pardon, Miss Amanda, but Mr. Roger Thurston has called.
Show him in. My parents will not be long from home.
Very good, Miss Amanda. Will you come in, Percy?
Thank you. I trust I see you well, Miss Amanda.
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. Thurston.
And your parents, are they not at home?
They shall be back shortly.
I'm sorry. I should not have intruded had I realized that you were alone.
It is no matter. In fact, I suddenly bethought me that you could be of inestimable service to me.
With all the pleasure in the world, Miss Amanda.
I have been to see your cousin this morning in Albemarle Street.
Indeed?
Tell me, why did he leave his father's house while you continue to live there? It seems odd.
They could never agree. His habits, those of a young man of fashion and wealth, appeared to disgust my lord. There were frequent unpleasant scenes.
Do you think him an evil man?
Charles? Pardon, no. He has been wild, as young men of his set are, and foolish, perhaps. But evil is too strong a word.
Then what is this affair of Medenham Abbey?
I told you I could not answer that.
Mr. Thurston, I must know what goes on there and have proof of your cousin's connection with the place. You alone can supply the information I need and help me save Bella from an impossible marriage.
But the marriage is arranged, is it not? Your sister would scarcely care to make herself the talk of the town by changing her mind at the 11th hour.
I know she would change her mind if she had sufficient reason. As for gossip, an heiress of Bella's standing may do as she chooses.
Are you then such very wealthy, young ladies? I confess I did not know that.
Oh, I have nothing compared to Bella. She has our grandfather's fortune. He died before I was born, so of course I was not included in his goodwill. Oh, I don't think she needs to hear anything for idle tongue. She has only to take herself off into the country for a time.
I see. It is just possible that I may be able to help you, Miss Amanda. There is vileness enough at Medenham Abbey for those who are there to see it. But I fancy there is no one whose word your sister would accept other than yourself. That Charles has been a visitor there for some years, I know for a fact. But it may be that he has given up such diversions on his engagement.
You mean that we must first find out if he still frequents the place, and then surprise him there? That you could probably do the first, but that I should have to do the second?
It is not an exploit for a timid person. You would need someone to aid you.
I know the very person, John Webster. He had hoped to wed Bella himself.
Capital. But you will have to contain yourself in patience for a little. This society, which has its headquarters at the Abbey, does not meet again for another month.
Then that will give us time to make a plan.
We shall not have many opportunities of meeting like this. How shall we contrive?
The park. I ride there nearly every morning before anyone is astir.
I will look out for you when I have anything new to tell you.
Amanda.
Your mother is coming. I'd best leave you.
There is just one thing before Mama comes. Does the name Francis Dashwood mean anything to you?
He is the owner of Medenham Abbey and the leader of the society that meets there. Also, he is a close friend of my cousin.
Indeed, Amanda, child, you are a fortunate creature. So many birthday gifts and all of them charming.
Except this from Aunt Matchett. Imagine Mama sending me this china figure. It's pretty, I suppose.
Let me see it. Ah, there is an inscription underneath. Josiah Wedgwood. It is well enough, though not of any great value. And certainly not the kind of thing to appeal to you. Gracious, here are more flowers. I declare I need not have been at the expense of ordering any for the ballroom so many of you had. Thank you, Joseph.
Very good, my lady.
Oh, are they not exquisite, Mama? Cream rosebuds. The most perfect scent. Who has sent them, Mandy?
Here is a card.
Oh.
Who is it, my dear?
Mr. Bassett. He has put the drollest message.
Oh, let me see. To my little sister-in-law-to-be, an affectionate congratulation.
Very handsome, I'm sure, and in perfect taste. What exactly is the shape supposed to represent, child?
It is a mark of interrogation, Mama.
Well, to be sure, that is a very odd shape to choose. A star now, or a crescent. A heart shape would not, of course, be suitable in this case.
It is a kind of jest which he has with me.
Oh, well, jest or no, it is a very pretty gift. And now time is getting on. Go to your room, Amanda, and I will send Mary to dress your hair. You must be ready in good time to help your papa and me to receive your guests.
You are not dancing, Miss Isabella.
Ah, I take it that my cousin Charles has not yet arrived.
No, Mr. Thurston. There are a number of guests still to come.
A charming scene. I see your sister is dancing with your young friend from the country.
John Webster. Yes, he returned from Berkshire only a few days ago.
He seems vastly taken with Miss Amanda. Only see how he glances at her. And she at him.
They have known each other since childhood, do not forget.
I would have said there was more to it than mere childish friendship.
Would you? Oh, Mandy is but playing a game. She is such a child at heart.
That is what I should have supposed, had I not known that...
Known what? Pray continue, Mr. Thurston.
Well, you may perchance recall that I mentioned not long ago my habit of riding early in the park.
Yes.
I have seen them there on several occasions. Oh, they have not observed me, but I took good care to keep out of sight. They were quite alone.
Alone?
Ah, my esteemed cousin. And filling my place nobly, I see. Isabella, my love, a thousand pardons for my lamentably tardy appearance. I declare I'm a positive slave to that valet of mine.
I'm very glad to see you, Charles.
You will pardon me, I'm sure. I see that Miss Dunster is without a partner.
Oh, the pudding-faced female. By all means, Roger, my boy, leave her out. She will have none of me. Fortunately, she has never been able to forgive me for my engagement.
You will excuse me, then.
There is blood upon your lip, child. Here, take my handkerchief. What has that fiend been saying to you?
We just talked of Amanda. Well, thank you, Charles. I might have caught my lip with my fan, that is all.
You must allow me to buy you a new one. I have not greeted your sister yet. She was dancing when I entered the room. She looks very beautiful tonight.
Yes, does she not? Not a bit like the little girl she usually seems. But I forget. She has grown up after all.
You do not feel that you can confide in me?
Confide? What should I have to confide? Had you better not go and greet my sister? It is her evening and almost to her honey.
You do well to remind me of my duty. I shall not be long away, and then perhaps you will do me the honor of dancing with me.
Very well, Charles.
Ah, Miss Amanda, I have found you at last. Permit me to offer my congratulations on your birthday.
Thank you, Mr. Bassett.
You must allow me to compliment you upon your looks, little sister.
I thank you, sir. I must thank you, too, for my gift from you.
Gift? Ah, my roses. An offering at the Shrine of Beauty. Dare I hope that you approve them?
Vastly. But I fear the Greeks when they bring gifts, particularly in such sinister shapes.
So you had the advantage of a classical education. I congratulate you.
Miss Brown, my former governess, taught me most things, sir. Except perhaps how to get the better of a rogue.
And that your own native wit can teach you, I'll be bound. May I hope for the honor of leading you out in the dance during the course of the evening?
Alas, sir, you are come so late that I am promised for the duration of the ball. It is melancholy, is it not?
It is, indeed. Is there not the smallest
and
chance?
And here is one of my partners coming to claim me. You will excuse me, sir. Mr. Fawcett, I declare.
Ah, Miss Dunster, I trust I see you well.
We have not met in an age. I must congratulate you upon your engagement. It was such a surprise.
You are most kind, madam. Can I perhaps procure you some refreshments?
I declare that is most thoughtful in you. I should like a glass of ratafia of all things.
Come with me, then. Ah, father.
Charles, my boy.
I was hoping for a word with you.
Oh, later, Father, with pleasure. In the meantime, I must go and dance with my intended. But first, let me present Miss Dunster, my father.
Dear Lord Bartlett, how do you do?
Charmed, my dear young lady, charmed.
Thank you so much, Lord Bartlett. It has been such a pleasure to meet you.
I should have something to say to Charles landing me with such a tedious female. Why, Miss Amanda, are you not dancing?
I am fatigued, my lord. I will soon watch for a while.
I see you're watching your sister and my son. They make a handsome couple, do they not?
Yes, but not, I think, a very lively one.
Well, what do you expect? Love is a serious business, my dear.
Love.
You don't set much store by it?
On the contrary, my lord. But I fail to observe much of the grand passion in this case.
Maybe you're in the right there. He's a cold fish, that son of mine.
Can he really be as cold and detached as he seems to be?
Oh, don't ask me, child. I know him less than anyone, it seems.
How can that be, sir? You are his father.
There's been little sympathy between Charles and myself, I fear. Some fault may have been on my side. My wife died when he was born, and I had little time to spare for him.
Poor infant. Lose a mother and a father at one fell blow.
You feel I should have taken more interest in the boy. Well, it may be so. At the time, I felt I had done what was necessary in providing a substitute mother and a brother for him in the shape of my sister and her boy. It worked well, too, for a while. Charles was exceedingly fond of his cousin.
He would be, of course.
Why, of course?
Well, don't you see, sir? There was no one else to whom he could give his affection.
Oh, you go too fast for me, my dear. What are you trying to say?
I'm not sure myself. For a moment, I felt I had made some discovery. But it is gone before I could properly lay hold on it. Would you not like some punch, my lord? I see my father is by the refreshment table, and I must soon leave your side, for I am engaged for the next dance.
Oh, dear me.
You're tired, Fanny?
Indeed, yes, James. I've been overcome with fatigue today after the Triford's ball last night. An insipid affair. Of course, one had to attend.
Oh, I don't know. Punch was excellent. The young people seemed to be well enough entertained. Little Miss Amanda was here, there, and everywhere. Oh, pretty little thing. With plenty of spirit.
A hoyden. Oh, our mother can tolerate such conduct. It's past my comprehension.
You've always been critical of other people's children, have you not, Fanny? Only your own son could ever win your approval.
And has not Roger always been everything that is desirable in a young man?
I suppose so. And yet...
And yet what?
I wonder sometimes if the boy's human. He seems to have no faults at all.
You should be glad of it. Your own son has enough in all conscience.
True. But it occurs to me I may be somewhat to blame in that.
To blame? You? But you have denied him nothing.
Except perhaps the most important thing.
Ah, I do not understand you.
Affection, my dear Fanny. The interest of a truly loving parent. That he never had.
What nonsense is this?
I don't think it is nonsense. It was something little Amanda Twyford said to me last night.
Something pert, I'll be bound.
No, Fanny, it is perfectly serious. To the effect that Charlie lost both his parents at one fell blow. I tell you, Fan, it made me think. If Kitty had lived, that boy would have been the apple of her eye. And of mine, too, I don't doubt.
Mortal sentiment, brother, if ever I heard it.
I blamed him, Kitty, for Kitty's death. I turned my back on him, absorbed in my own selfish grief.
Believe me, brother, these are idle thoughts. You'd best go to bed. You're not as young as you were, and these late nights are undermining your constitution.
Yes, I am tired, it's true. I'll take your advice, sister. Good night to you.
Good night. I must apprise Roger of this. There is no time to be lost.
So Miss Amanda Twyford grows upon my uncle, does she? So much the better.
What can you mean, Roger? I'm alarmed for your future now that James has found this sudden tenderness for your cousin.
Never fear, Mother. I know a trick worth two of that.
Have a care, Roger. What do you mean to do?
Like you, I am coming to rely less upon my uncle's goodwill. But I fancy I know a way to hook a fortune and a pretty face into the bargain.
You don't mean Amanda Twyford. I cannot abide
it. It is best that you should not know what I am about. Only trust me, and we shall both reap the benefit. You'll see. I'm glad you could contrive this meeting, Miss Amanda.
Oh, it was easy. Mama has been overcome by the heat of London, and she and my father have returned to Berkshire for the time being. What is that great package you are carrying?
It is for you. A disguise.
A disguise?
My cousin has left town, as you know. He has done so in order to be at a meeting of the society at Medenham tomorrow night. So now is the time for you to gain an entry to the Abbey.
Oh, yes.
The package contains the robe and mask worn by the ladies of the society. Pull the hood well down over your head, and on no account remove the mask. Do you still intend to take your friend Webster with you?
Yes. After a deal of argument, he agreed to accompany me.
You had best leave him outside the Abbey grounds. I have no disguise for him. Now, I understand that my mother has invited you and your sister to take tea with her tomorrow.
Yes.
Make an excuse not to accompany your sister. Get word to your friend to meet you at the park gates. A coach will be waiting to drive you both to Windsor, to the Castle Inn. There you will find horses. Follow the road to Maidenhead, and then make your way to the ford. Can you row a boat?
Yes.
Good. Then you can leave your friend Webster with the horses, for you may need to escape quickly. There will be a boat waiting at the ford, but no ferryman. You must do the best you can.
But what of Bella, when she returns home and finds me missing?
Leave her a note. Say you have gone with John, so that she may know you are in safe hands. But not one word of the Abbey, I caution you. And now I must leave you. I wish you good fortune.
Dark it is. There's a storm coming up. I hope and pray the horses don't take fright, that John will be able to control them. But I must not waste any more time. White cloak, black mask. That's right. Now the hood over my head. So. Oh, what a bright flash. It showed me where I am, quite close to the house. What are those white shapes gliding across the lawn? Can they be ghosts? Oh, of course not, Amanda, you goose. They're women dressed like me. They've gone now. I'd better make for the house before it lightens again. This feels like the front door. Yes, that last flash showed me. Showed something painted over the door. Face the Kavudra. Do what you will. A strange motto. I do not think I care over much for it. I wonder if the door be locked. No. Oh, what a strange room. Statues. Pictures that. Fire! Disgusting! Come on, Abby. I will get away as fast as I can. Oh, thank heaven I am out in the air again, away from that dreadful room. There are lights in the chapel windows. I shall be safe there, in a church. This is worse than that other place. Those men, dressed as monks up at the altar. What are they doing?
Look, brothers, a nymph and trying. After her!
Oh, don't let them catch me. Help me. I can't be far from the river. But can John see my signal? Come quickly.
What's this?
Let me go.
Amanda.
A dying nun, Brother Charles. She has broken the rule and must pay the penalty.
Aye, that she must.
We must teach her a lesson.
By all means, Brother Francis. But this is my prize. Oh. I brought the lady here and therefore claim first right. You may safely leave the honor of the order in my hands.
Ah, so now we have come at the reason for your refusal to join in our diversions recently. Dammy, I thought it seemed odd that we should scarce have set eyes on you these last months. You were ever a sly dog, Charles. But do not let us hinder you, brother. Come, brother, let us lead him to his prey. I, for one, see no pleasure in being
caught. Come with me.
Where are you taking me?
To shelter. There is a small pavilion hereabouts. Yes, here it is. Here, at least, we shall be dry. When the storm has abated a little, I have a carriage here and will conduct you to a place of safety.
You? You think I would go anywhere in your company after all I've seen here?
What have you seen?
Those hot fiends. Is that a holy place? Conjuring up a devil?
You must first believe in a devil before you can conjure one up. Those men and I myself have long ceased to believe in any power, for good or evil. Once, such things amused me. But now...
Now?
I seem to have lost my sense of humor.
Then you have little left of you. You must long since have lost your self-respect to visit this haunt of wickedness and vice.
What else did you see?
Everything of the most bestial, debauched. Statues, pictures. I cannot tell you.
I'm sorry that you should have been exposed to such sights. But I warned you on that previous occasion. What moved you to come here again?
I told you I would do everything in my power to prevent your marriage to Bella. When she learns from my own lips how you conduct yourself, with what unspeakable debauchery.
So that is it.
John is awaiting me to take me home. I must go.
Your friend John Webster brought you here? Why did he not accompany you into the grounds of the Abbey?
I told him to remain on the other side of the river with the horses, for fear they might bolt in the storm. Let me pass, please.
Wait. Have you thought where you'll go now? You cannot reach London before the small hours. You'll be the center of God knows what scandal if you should travel unchaperoned with a man through the night.
I see no help for that.
But I do. I have an old Irish servant. The woman who nursed me when I was a child, living at Maidenhead, not far from here. She is a creature of unimpeachable honor, and you may safely pass the night under her roof.
I will not go there alone with you.
Webster will accompany us. After we have seen you safely lodged with Bridget, we will journey to London and concoct some tale that will satisfy your parents.
There, in the country for a few days. There's only Isabella. I left her a note in some sort explaining. Perhaps your plan is best.
Brandy, is that you?
Oh, John. What are you doing here? The horses, are they safe?
Once the rain began, I sought shelter for them at the farm and came straight across. Brandy, are you all right? And who is this? Oh, I see. Your servant, Mr. Bassett. May I ask why?
There is no time for explanation now. Take Miss Amanda across the river and walk up to the top of the lane. I will have my carriage waiting there to take you both to my old nurse at Maidenhead. Miss Amanda will be safe in her charge for the time being.
That's right, my dear. Drink it up now. There's nothing like warm milk for making you sleep.
Oh, nurse, I don't believe I could sleep if I tried. Not tonight.
And what's so special about tonight?
Were you with Mr. Bassett when he was a child?
Oh, I helped bring him into the world. I and held my lady's hand as she breathed her last.
I have heard it said that my Lord Bassett took his son in dislike because of his wife's death.
He loved my lady as a man loves a woman only once in a lifetime. He never recovered from the shock of losing her. And God forgive him, he never took to the child. He sensed his father's dislike, and in his little innocent way he tried to overcome it, but he met with no response, poor lamb. Oh, I tell you, it fair broke my heart. And then there was his cousin.
Mr. Roger. They were very attached to each other, were they not?
No brothers were ever closer. But the affection was all on Master Charles's side. He refused to see that his cousin was worthless and treacherous.
Treacherous?
He did everything he could to discredit Master Charles. Not a thing happened, but he would go running with it to his mother, and she would see that it found its way to my lord's ears and lost nothing in the telling. And then came the day when at last Master Charles realized just what kind of man his cousin was.
What happened?
Well, there was a maid in my lord's service, a pretty, silly country wench called Marjorie, and no better than she should be. Well, she was found to be expecting.
Oh, how dreadful. But go on.
He swore that Master Charles was responsible. He came to me one night full of trouble, for he'd seen the wench coming from Master Roger's room on more than one occasion. Yet that precious cousin of his had stood by without a word when my lord had taxed Master Charles with the misdeed.
Oh, why did the girl lie about it?
Oh, you may well ask. Of course, it was a put-up thing between Master Roger and herself. At last, Master Charles accused him to his face.
What happened?
The rogue denied it flatly.
And did the truth ever come out?
Never. Marjorie was sent away. She had her child, and my lord provided for them both. No more was ever heard of them.
And Mr. Barson?
Oh, well, he was punished, of course. His allowance was stopped for a time to pay the girl's dues. But from that time forward, he changed. In those few days, he'd become a man. He began to get a name for wildness, especially after I left the house.
You left? But why?
I went to my lord and told him the truth. He would not believe me. So I said I would no longer remain in a house that sheltered such a perfidious rascal as his nephew. For old time's sake, he pays me an annuity, and he bought me this cottage. So I came here and only heard from a distance of the path my poor lamb was treading.
I suppose he considered that he might as well play the game. He had the undeserved reputation
for it. He felt there was no more honor, love, or trust in the whole world.
But he did have you.
A hired nurse instead of the loving parents every child is entitled to.
Nurse, I feel so unhappy. I can't think why. It was indeed good of you, Mr. Thurston, to accompany me home. Please sit down for a moment while I go and see how Mandy does.
I hope you may find her better.
I left her lying down. I hoped she would have recovered by now and be downstairs to greet us. Mandy? Mandy? Not in her room. Perhaps she's gone to mine for some reason. Not here either. What's that on my dressing table? A note.
Dearest Bella, I am gone out, so I may not tell you where. It is possible that I may not return until tomorrow. But you need have no alarm. I shall be with John. You will agree I could not be in better hands, your loving Amanda. With John? Oh, she cannot mean... Oh, no, surely she cannot mean that.
Do pray forgive me for leaving you, Mr. Phelps.
My dear Miss Twyford, you look quite distraught. Is anything wrong?
I have had some disturbing news. This note, what do you think it can mean?
I fear there is only one conclusion to be drawn from it.
You mean that Amanda and John have eloped?
I am afraid so.
What ought I to do, I wonder?
Why? Surely you will follow them and bring her back.
No. Why should I try to prevent their union? I may have ruined my own hopes of happiness through my blind folly. But that is no reason for destroying hers. And his.
Isabella, forgive me, but I cannot help knowing the regard in which you have held Webster. Now that he is removed from your life and your heart, do not, my dearest, be content to replace that feeling by the mockery of a marriage of convenience. Will you not accept instead the homage of a heart that truly loves you as that cousin of mine has never done?
You must forgive me, Mr. Thurston, but I fear me that I can never love you, or indeed any man again. I sought a marriage of convenience rather than the happy union I might have had. I shall keep my word to your cousin.
So be it. I shall not importune you again. I wonder if everything is as it appears.
In what way?
In regard to your sister, Mr. Webster. Suppose they have not eloped, but have embarked on some escapade.
It could be so. Oh, John is so upright and honest. I cannot imagine him doing anything dishonorable.
Did your sister recount to you her adventures on her journey from Berkshire? In particular, a mysterious abbey which she tried to explore?
Yes.
This may be painful to you, but it must be said. It is a place of ill repute. And I know that my cousin is staying there at the moment.
So that is where he went?
Yes. I believe your sister may have followed Charles and taken Webster with her.
But why?
To gain knowledge of what goes on there. Knowledge which your sister hopes will turn you from Charles in loathing.
Believe me, if she succeeds in entering the abbey, she will certainly find sufficient for her purpose.
Dear God, you mean...
It is a stronghold of depravity and debauchery, and no fitting place for a young girl.
Then we must rescue her at once. Oh, take me to this place, I beg of you.
My carriage is waiting below. We may set out at once.
In here, my dear.
the driver taking the carriage. Are we not going to the Abbey to find my sister?
We are going nowhere, my dear, for the present. As for your sister, she must do the best she can.
What do you mean?
My meaning should be plain. I made you an honorable offer of my heart and hand. You gave me no hope. Wed you, I must. So this is the only way.
Are you mad?
Never more sane. Come and sit here beside me, and I will endeavor to teach you to love me after all.
How dare you! Let me out of here at once.
Not now. Tomorrow, if you wish. You will be only too glad then to accompany me to a reverend gentleman I know who will wed us without asking any questions.
Tomorrow?
Yes, tonight you stay here with me. I fear I cannot offer you luxury. This is but a poor, deserted toll house. But we shall be snug enough together.
But you cannot do this. You say you love me. If you have any claim to the name of gentleman...
What use are my claims to that title without money to back them up?
So that is it. Your avowal of love was a falsehood. All this is to force me to wed you so that you may enjoy my fortune.
Your parents would have sold you for the sake of Charles's title and position. Were you any more virtuous than I when you agreed to marry a man you could not love?
No. Mayhap I deserve some punishment for that. But not to be tied for life to a man such as you.
We've talked enough. Come
here. No. Oh, no.
You hell-born will be burned tonight.
What is this, Fitz? Why have you stopped?
Beg pardon, Your Honor, but there's a pesky female in the road. She won't move out of the way.
Best see what the trouble is.
Why, Bella.
John. Oh, John, thank God.
What in the world are you doing here? Mr. Bassett, it's Bella.
Isabella, my dear, what is it?
Quickly, sir. Mr. Thurston, your cousin, you must save him.
Roger, save him from what? Where is he?
In the toll house, down the road there. See, it is in flames. He is unconscious.
Good God! Smith, look to this lady. I must see what I can do to help.
I'm indeed sorry to intrude upon you, Aunt Fanny, at such an early hour. But I'm the bearer of a message from my cousin.
From Roger?
Yes. I have something of an unpleasant nature to communicate to you. Roger has met with an accident.
No.
There is no danger of his life, the doctor says.
Thank God. What has happened?
What I have to tell you must go no further, but you at least must know the truth. Yesterday, my cousin tried to abduct Miss Twyford.
Oh, no.
It seems he took her to a deserted toll house on the road to Maidenhead. A struggle ensued in which Miss Isabella overturned a lamp and started a fire. During the upheaval which followed, Roger was not senseless, and Miss Isabella made her escape.
Go on.
By great good fortune, a friend and myself chanced to be traveling along the road where Miss Isabella ran for help. Between us, we managed to get Roger out.
Is he much hurt?
He's been badly burned, I fear. But he is conscious and has the best attention. He is lying at the Bear Inn at Maidenhead.
I will go to him. I don't doubt that you will be only too ready to explain to your father where I am gone and why.
I think you know that my father will never hear this story from my lips. You wish to see me, sir?
I did, Charles. I learned that you and Miss Isabella have broken off your engagement.
You've seen Twyford, then?
I have.
Her affections were already firmly placed elsewhere, sir.
So I understand. I made a brief journey yesterday into Kent.
Mm-hmm. A pleasant country.
I didn't go there to admire the scenery. I went to interview a female. Her name is Marjorie. Ah, you recall the name, I see. She marked a turning point in your life. But today I had the truth from her.
She might have spared herself the trouble. Her work and his were done too well to be undone now.
Charlie, I discovered something else. I know how you came by that injury to your hand.
What? How do you know?
I had the honor of a visit from Miss Amanda Twyford.
Amanda?
She gave me a full account of her escapade at Medlin and of the sequel which involved her sister.
The devil she did.
I know everything, Charlie.
I hope you used her gently, sir. It must have taken courage to confess to such an exploit. And for the pure cause of justice.
Not quite, my boy.
What do you mean?
Her courage is undeniable. A motive is another matter. I doubt if she herself realizes her true reason for coming here.
I don't quite follow you, sir.
Why do you suppose she was so anxious to clear your character in my eyes?
Why? She is the soul of integrity and could not bear the thought of anyone being misjudged, however much...
Yes?
However much she disliked the person concerned.
You're a fool, Charlie. But in one thing, I've been wrong, and grievously wrong, in my judgment of you. And for that, I humbly ask your pardon.
Say no more, Father. There have been faults on both sides. Why did you say just now that I was a fool?
Because you said that Miss Amanda disliked you.
There they go, the last of our guests.
Oh, our little Isabella. What a beautiful bride she made. Oh, I hope John will take good care of her.
You may be sure he will.
Mrs. John Webster. Oh, I never thought... But no doubt it is all for the best. James.
Yes?
Have you heard that Roger Thurlston is to marry Miss Georgina Dunster?
He's welcome to her. All the same, I hear it was she who nursed him back to health after his accident.
Oh, never speak of that. James.
Hmm?
Is that Charles I can see going towards the orchard?
It is. I believe I saw Amanda straying in that direction a few minutes ago.
My dear, do you suppose...
We will suppose nothing, my love. These young people must run their own lives from now on.
You are very silent, Miss Amanda.
I was thinking how much I shall miss Isabella.
And John as well?
Of course. We were childhood friends, you know.
Only friends.
How do you mean, Mr. Bartlett?
Oh, forgive me. But I suppose you'd be in love with John Webster.
Oh, John and I. Why, it is too ludicrous.
I don't see why. You seemed always to turn to him in need.
As I would have turned to a brother. But as for love, I don't love anybody. At least...
At least?
I don't know. I am not perfectly sure what love is.
What do you think it is, Amanda?
I should think it is wanting to be with someone for the rest of your life. Not being able to think of anything or anybody else. I should think...
Yes?
I should think it happens before one knows. But suddenly one realizes...
Amanda, you once told me you never wished to see or hear of me again. That you detested me. Is this still true?
I talked a deal of nonsense once, sir.
You no longer detest me?
I don't think I ever did. Not truly. But you offended me and crossed me, so I was annoyed with you. And later, when I was determined to find you out in something discreditable, it was more of an adventure to me than anything else. But when I did go to that place and discovered what went on there, I was not pleased at my discovery. Sad.
Do you know why you felt sad, child?
I do now. It was because I didn't want to prove you evil, but honorable and noble.
That I can never be.
But you are. Your past indiscretions are nothing. What I know of your relationship with your cousin proves the essential nobility of your nature. And even if it did not, I would not care.
Not care? Care?
Why should I? You see, the fact is that I love you. I have only just discovered it.
Amanda, dear, you are the most wonderful creature in the world. I worship you.
Don't want worship, sir. Only a warm human love. Such as ordinary mortals know. Can you not give me that?
I can, my love.
Then what on earth are we waiting for? Do you not mean to kiss me, Charles?
Oh, my darling. That was John Westbrook as Charles Barsett, Valerie Kirkbright as Amanda Twyford,
Barbara Cooper as Lady Twyford and David March as Roger Thelston in The Georgian Rake by Alice Chetwynd Leigh. The rest of the cast was as follows: Lord Bassett, George Curzon, Isabella Twyford, Sheila Grant, John Webster, John Graham, Mrs. Fanny Thelston, Janet Burnell, Lord Twyford, Godfrey Kenton, Miss Brown, Amanda's governess, and Bridget, Mary O'Farrell, Jem, the coachman, Anthony Vickers, Georgina Dunster, Peggy Butt, Francis Dashwood, Jonathan Scott. Other parts played by Donald MacKillop, Frank Partington, and John Pullen. The production was by Audrey Cameron.